Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining session B349. My name is Hector Linares. I'm a program manager with the System Center Virtual Machine Manager team. Welcome to the session, and I'm not sure if we're gonna have a full session, but please, if you guys wanna move forward, you know, be more intimate and in contact with everyone, please do. So today we're gonna talk about storage management in System Center and Virtual Machine Manager. And this is, you know, part of a long journey that we've been on since the first release of System Center 2012 and you know, essentially laying down a platform for what we wanna do with storage management and eventually delivering value-add services around hybrid cloud solutions, storage monitoring, et cetera. And so I'll be talking about our vNext or our threshold investments and how we integrate with Azure Site Recovery for DR orchestration and a lot of the support that we have now for the platform and primarily on scale-up file server and our continuing work with our partners and our ecosystem around SAN and NAS. I will leave time at the end for questions, but if there's that burning question, you know, I'll repeat the question, but at the end we'll have an extra mic, okay? Alrighty, so how did we start this journey, or where did we start with this journey on storage management? Really, this started with, you know, going out to our customers and asking, what do you do today around automation? You know, there's a lot, 99, I don't know the exact statistic, but for most Hyper-V deployments, they're deployed on storage, SAN storage. And so we wanted to find out, what do you do in a day-to-day context in managing storage in the context of Hyper-V? Not just storage management in general, but what do you do in a Hyper-V context? You know, so 3 years ago, we went out and asked, what do you do around automation? You know, we knew the private cloud was coming. We wanted to make sure we had the fully integrated stack. For example, what you see this week with CPS. You know, we knew that that's coming. We know automation is a key piece of that. And most of our customers basically don't have automation built. You know, they don't actually do automation. There's either a lack of knowledge or a lack of time and resources. And for those that actually could invest in storage automation, really is around reducing human error. So, you know, 50% of the folks that don't have any automation really lack the expertise in the team and around storage operations and managing large SANs. Typically, that was left to a dedicated team that managed storage for Linux, Unix, mainframe, Windows, essentially that centralized storage team. But if you wanted to manage in the context of Hyper-V, there's really not that much storage knowledge. The other side of it, maybe there's too many APIs. Right, over time, mergers and acquisitions, you know, new pod designs, you'd have a lot of different storage arrays based on the generations you went through in the data center. Storage typically doesn't, you know, get revved as fast, so you'd have 4, 5, 6-year-old arrays in the data center. So you start collecting all these devices, and each one essentially has a different API. So you could automate one operation, you know, but it'd take you the whole time just to do that one operation across many devices and really not get to the value-add components. So our journey starts from a Hyper-V perspective in managing the three key components in virtualization: storage, compute, the servers, and networking. And for that, really, all we're doing enabling here is the IaaS, or, you know, infrastructure as a service, to deliver virtual machines from which you can build on new services from there on in. So if we look at just storage, if we focus on just storage, and the three pillars on storage management, on how we centered ourselves from a system center perspective, we really went after insight as a first set of investments. Ensuring that for everything you manage in Hyper-V, virtual machines, physical machines in Hyper-V, in a Hyper-V estate, you would understand everything that it's connected to from a storage perspective, whether it's SAN, NAS, or fiber channel switch fabrics. Then we said, once we have the insight, we want to make sure that we have that insight across many devices. So we wanted to give you the flexibility to manage a large number of devices. And so that's where we went with a standards-based management approach. So if you see our investments around SMIS, this is really where we wanted to give the biggest flexibility. And then finally, the enabling automation. So we have deep insight. We've got a large partner ecosystem, first party and third party. And then we wanted to make sure that we delivered automation as part of that entire that entire investment. And so, there we go. So if you look at our investments here, This is a typical slide that I use as part of the introduction. This has really been a lot of the investments that we've made in storage management. And we're at a point in our evolution where now we can start really delivering storage monitoring, scalable provisioning, and hybrid solutions based on the platform of insight, flexibility, and automation. So what are we doing for vNext? So I'm not going to really cover much of what we've already done. I'll do a quick refresher, but really I want to spend the time on what we're delivering in vNext. I will give one caveat. The demos that you're going to see here, they're not in the preview build. These are actually post-preview builds, so you will be the first to actually see what's coming, right? But it would not be something you can play with today, right? So that's the one piece that I'll just say right now. But it is something that is coming in future builds. So key areas of investment for us, managing Windows NAS or Windows Scale-Out file servers. For us, has been a critical piece to deliver for our partners in Windows Server and Windows Client, who are delivering the data plane and the control plane services around storage. We wanted to make sure we have the management layer on top of that to actually do from bare metal provisioning all the way up to file share provisioning, intent-based provisioning when it comes to Windows Azure Pack, and essentially being able to create plans that really deliver an SLA based on the underlying storage that you might have. Next is our investments on storage replication management. So VMM doesn't actually do any of the replication. We actually leave that to the underlying storage devices, whether it's first-party storage, like you've heard this week around storage replica, or third-party storage, which we announced support for in this week as well for partners like HP, NetApp, EMC, and other partners who have storage replication in their devices. We wanted to make sure we provide a consistent failover experience as part of our integration with Azure Site Recovery, or ASR. So quick question, how many of you have used ASR, Azure Site Recovery, with Hyper-V Replica or maybe with InMaj? We've got a few, okay. So I'll go over some of that and do a refresher as well and compare and contrast, okay. New features in Windows Platform on storage quality of service. We have some value add there on how we manage this at scale, and I'll have some questions on moving forward, how we would like to see that come together from a Windows Azure Pack perspective around chargeback, around delivering SLAs. It'd be great to get your feedback because this is definitely the right time for that. And finally, our investments around storage monitoring. One of the, for me, a critical component of everything we're doing here is that we can deliver storage monitoring inbox, meaning when you deploy System Center and you plug in your device under our storage APIs, you would get monitoring from day one, right? And so now you'll see our investments finally come together as how you can do that with our vNext. Okay. So let's quickly go over SM API. Storage Management API is actually something that ships inbox with Windows Server. It's a WMI V2 provider that also offers PowerShell commandlets. And this ships with every Windows Server, and this is the base component that we use from a System Center perspective to manage storage. Underneath SM API, you plug into it, or our partners can plug into this via what are called SMPs, or Storage Management Providers. Windows, Microsoft does ship two providers inbox. One of them is our SMIS storage service, and this is what transcodes all of the management APIs in storage management API down to the underlying SAN, NAS, and our fiber channel fabrics. We also ship a unified provider for spaces that offers file storage and block storage. Right? So what you're going to see new in SM API, for example, is the ability to create a new file share. Right? That's all been integrated into one API as opposed to having multiple different APIs. So we definitely want to streamline that. And also, third parties can integrate via their own SMP. They can build their own SMP plugin, plug into SM API. The key piece here is that System Center, as one of the components that builds on top of SM API, has a consistent experience for development. And also, I'll just mention, we use something called pass-through as well, which allows us to go beyond the functionality of what's in SM API. So if you follow what we do with VMM in the R2 release, we actually did manage NAS devices. So these are devices from EMC and NetApp with SMB3 implementations. And so we used pass-through to actually manage those devices because actually SMAPI didn't natively support NAS devices, for example, new file share or Acklink file shares. But with standards-based management and pass-through, we're actually able to talk directly to the provider and still deliver this value add. Now in vNext, we've actually incorporated all of the NAS management into SMAPI with no degradation in functionality from a system center perspective. So if we take the same API and look at it from the devices that we support and the evolution of all the devices that we have, you know, we started really with iSCSI and Fibre Channel SANs. We then added SAS in R2 along with Fibre Channel Switch Management, NAS management, and also our first iteration of scale-out file server management with shared JBODs or shared SAS. And what we see in vNext is support for scale-out file server on shared nothing storage, and also the work that we've done to integrate scale-out file servers with your existing SANs. So the key piece here is that we definitely want, as we move forward, investments in SMB3 are critical to what we're doing in the private cloud, and we want to make sure that you have the flexibility to deploy scale-out file server on top of any storage device or any storage implementation that you want, whether it's SAN, shared SAS, or shared nothing SAS. So how does this all come together? VMM server, the VMM server service is what talks to SMAPI locally. And from the local instance of SMAPI, we reach out to the remote providers. And those providers don't necessarily have to be, are not installed on VMM. They're either running in their own server or on the device themselves. So they're either an embedded provider on the device or proxy provider running in another service. So that's one way of managing the device. We don't conflict with the existing admin tools that are out there, and so we actually can coexist with both. So if you have your storage admins creating LUNs and doing operations on this side, all of that will be reflected through the storage service into VMM, new LUNs, unmasking, etc. And then if we fill this in with the Windows host side, all of the storage management that we used to have, that we've had for Hyper-V, we're now extending into scale-out file server. So that's why I make this generic and basically say, if it's a Windows box that's running Hyper-V or scale-out file server, we use iSCSI Initiator, HBA APIs, NPIV as well for Hyper-V, and we manage all of the disks and volumes as well to ensure that we can do an end-to-end correlation between the LUNs or the file shares on the devices to whatever is exposed to the Hyper-V or scale-out file server servers. So the first demo I'm going to do is actually just as part of the refresher. We've been working with Nimble Storage, and they are working on a provider that plugs into SMAPI and VMM, and so I'm going to quickly go over that. Okay, so I've got a pretty simple setup here. I've only got one array, and this is actually running in the SNIA lab over in Colorado Springs. But you can have multiple providers and multiple arrays in the VMM view. In this case, I've got a storage array with one pool under management, and I've classified it under Gold Storage. We use classification as a way of diversifying the different storage pools or file shares that are under management. So if you wanted to create a VMM cloud with Gold Storage or Silver Storage, you can classify at the pool level. You can classify at the file shares as well, if you're using scale-out file server. And if you are using local storage, maybe it's a VDI deployment with fast SSDs, you can also classify the local disks now as well as in your servers. So you can classify all types of storage, expose that to your cloud, and then provision VMs, not based on what disk or what host, but really what type of storage you need. So you've had gold storage that's high IOPS versus bronze storage that's low IOPS, cheap and deep. You can differentiate those two. So the first thing, once you have an array under management, it really comes through the provider. But as soon as this is plugged in underneath, I can start provisioning storage to my Hyper-V clusters. So if I right-click on a cluster, hit Properties, I've got a tab called Shared Volumes. In this case, I've got a CSV already presented to the cluster, but I can go and add a new one. So in this case, I've already pre-created a LUN called LUN2. And if I don't have any LUNs that maybe have provisioned for the first time, I can go off and create a new LUN. So these LUNs are provisioned in real time. As soon as the LUN is available, we'll come back to the screen, and then you can configure the CSV from there. So once I have my LUN provision, I pick the LUN that I need. I can quick format it, provide a volume, hit OK. And I can do this multiple times. Maybe I want to add 10 CSVs. And so once I hit OK, VMM will go off and unmask the LUN to all of the hosts. So if you have a 64-node cluster, with these two clicks, you can unmask it to all the hosts in the cluster. We'll then initialize, partition, format the disk. Once it's formatted, we'll add it to the cluster, make it a CSV, and at that point, you're available to start provisioning provisioning virtual machines. So once the storage has been provisioned, I'm going to flip over to the VMs and services, and I'll show you here in my cloud, my VMM cloud, I can right-click properties. And now that I've got that storage under management and classified, I can go to the storage tab here and actually say how much of the gold storage I need. So if I had multiple classifications, you can start creating different clouds with different types of storage. So in this case, I would say gold storage, hit OK. And then when I have, from my template perspective, I can tag my templates to go directly to storage, or as part of provisioning, I can say which classification I want to go to. So that's the first quick demo. So a question for all of you. How many of you have actually used VMM and the storage integration? Okay. All right, so let's quickly go into what we do for Windows NAS, for our Windows scale-out file servers. Let me build this up here. So I wanted to make sure that I contrasted what we have in R2 and some of the gaps that we had in R2 and how we're filling that in and moving forward in vNext. So from a file share provisioning perspective, we have, we've had the ability to create new file shares, and we're extending that to new capabilities around new share from LUN, primarily around scale-out file servers backed by a SAN. You can provision the LUN and then convert that into a, or use that as a backend for your file shares in the scale-out file server case. In R2, we actually did not have support for storage tiering and deduplication, so we've added that support, and for multiple tiers of storage and the ability to turn on and turn off deduplication at the file share level. How many of you have used or are using Spaces today, scale-out file server with Spaces? Okay. All right. So, yeah, it's been a gap for us, and a lot of customers have provided us feedback, so we want to make sure we got that into the next release. We're moving away from relying on multiple APIs for storage management, really centralizing on SMAPI, and so that we've switched over to the updated SMAPI interfaces, and we do this, again, without regression and functionality, but for us, it's definitely a consolidation of the development effort. And finally, anything that we've done with pass-through for NAS, we're also folding that into SMAPI via the storage service. So the ACLing stays the same. That doesn't change. Really, the experience is new file share from pool and an ACL to a 16-node, 32-node, or 64-node Hyper-V cluster. So in the Windows scale-out file server case, we can actually go a step further than just managing them, but we can actually go and provision them. How many of you have used bare metal provisioning in VMM for, let's say, Hyper-V cluster deployments? Okay. So we've extended that functionality to also deploy scale-out file servers. So if you have a rack of servers coming into your data center and you want to add a role to a set of those, maybe four servers that need to be a scale-out file server for your VM deployments, you can actually use VMM to not only deploy Hyper-V clusters, but also deploy the scale-out file servers. And so that's the type of technology that also is used in CPS as well for deploying the environments and deploying these clusters all from one console. So we had support for scale-out file server bare metal deployments, but we did not have the ability to scale out these clusters in R2. So we've added the ability to grab a brand new node that just arrived in the data center and scale out a file server from bare metal, right? And so this is the case, for example, that you have a server that has gone bad, that needs to be replaced, and you need to provision it and add it back into the cluster, right? So that's the ability for using bare metal provisioning consistently for Hyper-V and for scale-out file server. And so we've also, there's some gaps that we had in R2 around power cycle management through a BMC, so we made sure we have that, and also a lot of feedback on the ability to execute commands via the invoke script commandlet against servers that are managed by VMM. Today we have that for Hyper-V, and now we're adding it for scale-out file servers. So one scenario that you could see here is, for example, you need to disable some ports on the server. You have four ports, only two of them in use. You want to disable the other two because they're not in use, they're not needed. You can now fire off this script and then go disable those ports. If you need to install new software or anything else you need to do, that's where you would have this invoke commandlet. And also the investments we made around scale-out file server backed by a SAN. So in this case, again, scale-out file servers, you know, we want to make sure we manage the shares and have VMs deployed on file shares and SMB3 as a main protocol between Hyper-V and your scale-out file servers. But those same file servers that I just provisioned from bare metal, I can backfill, you know, I can use Spaces storage underneath, or I can use SAN storage as well. All right, so if you have a Nimble storage array or an EMC or NetApp array under management, and you want to add the ability to deploy via scale-out file servers, you can do that now with vNext as from a single console, manage the whole thing. So once you have your pool under management, you create your LUNs. From there, we can create the file shares, and then you can echo those file shares to your Hyper-V host and start deploying your virtual machines. So we want to make sure that we provide the consistent experience for our investments moving forward around SMB3 and file shares. But again, with all the benefits of connecting an array to a server. So if you have an array that you just deployed and a bunch of scale-out file servers that were just bare metal provision, you need to either log on the initiators to the targets, you need to zone the HBAs to the target ports. All of that can now be handled through VMM for both Hyper-V and scale-out file server. So consistency and experience, leveraging all the investments that we've done already for Hyper-V, and really focusing on the automation of file share provisioning. All right. So what you saw before with the Nimble storage example, that's R2 based. What you're seeing now is capabilities that are not in the preview build, but are part of later builds. So let me expand this for VMM. Okay. So under storage, there's multiple levels here that you can look at your managed devices, for example, arrays. But primarily for file servers, this is where you would have your NAS devices and your scale-out file servers under management. So if here I've got an R2 scale-out file server, and here are my later threshold file servers, if I right-click on that file server and go to properties, you'll see the cluster nodes that are under management. This is a simple cluster, one node, and also all the shared volumes, CSVs, that are part of that cluster. Now, if I want to, let's say, add a SAN device to this, I can click on Add, and I can provision a new LUN or unmask a new LUN to that scale-out file server, and then provision file shares on top of that. Now, if I have a scale-out file server managed by with Spaces, I can right-click and manage pools, and from there I can provision my pools in a shared JBOD environment. That then I can use to create new file shares. And so I'm going to stop here because the other part of the demo that I was hopefully trying to get here is not working. So I just wanted to make sure that I highlight those pieces, but I really can't go any further than this. So I'm going to switch back. All right, so storage replication management. So the work that we've done so far around our integration with Azure Site Recovery is around enabling Hyper-V replica. And so with Hyper-V replica, you have storage agnostic replication capabilities built into the platform, managed through VMM, orchestrated through Azure Site Recovery. So if you want to do a failover of your applications, that's where you would use an orchestration tool like ASR to actually handle failover and failback, whether it's planned or unplanned, of your applications. But we want to make sure that the value add delivered by ASR is consistent regardless of the underlying storage technology in use. So we start with hyper-array replica, and these are the capabilities that are main capabilities supported. The ones that are worth pointing out, for example, the ability to test a failover without actually affecting your primary site. So while the application is running, protected application, you can test the failover in a separate, isolated environment without impacting production. If you look at the capabilities in ASR today, the ability to fail over between sites and the ability to fail over from on-prem into Azure. So those new capabilities released this year. And so, you know, there's a lot of flexibility here for your DR deployments. So if we look at how this is all comes together for Hyper-V Replica, you've got ASR running in Azure, right? You've got a VMM on each site, VMM server in New York, let's say, and VMM server in New Jersey. And you install a plugin on the VMM service. That plugin connects to ASR. You connect to the vault. You provide your key. And then you can use ASR. And at that point, that's when we start flowing information, metadata information, into ASR. Once the metadata is in ASR, then we can start protecting your clouds. And at that point, you can start, through ASR, it'll orchestrate all of the configuration for Hyper-V Replica. Right. So what you won't see in VMM, for example, are commandlets for Hyper-V Replica configuration. That's actually orchestrated from ASR directly once you protect your clouds. So setting up is pretty straightforward. Sign up for the service, create your vault, install the plugin, publish your clouds, configure your clouds, which actually goes and does all the Hyper-V Replica work, pair your networks and pair your classifications. This is a key component as part of the orchestration. You actually want to tell ASR, from primary site of VM on gold storage connected to my production network, I want to fail over and connect to maybe silver storage on my backup or recovery network, right? There's no way for Hyper-V Replica to know that up front, so you actually have to tell ASR, and ASR will do that that translation from primary to secondary as part of failover, and then all the IP fix up and everything else. On your primary site, you create your protected VM. By that, it means you go into the VMM template, say, I want protection. You pick your RPO of 30 seconds, 5 minutes, 15 minutes, and we'll go off and provision a protected virtual machine. And if needed, you can add that VM to a recovery plan if it's part of a multi-tier SharePoint or a guest cluster, like a SQL guest cluster. So the new capability that we announced as part of TechEd is the ability to actually integrate storage replication into that entire lifecycle. Okay? And so the key components here is that we've got customers today deploying SANs, and they've already paid for the replication licenses. They already have you already have the data centers, and you have you have these workflows already built up. The best solution there is basically reuse what you already have. And so we want to make sure we give you that flexibility so that you can protect your VMs using Azure Site Recovery, but using the replication technology of choice in your data center. So flexibility. Automation is a key piece here. So there's a lot that goes into actually failing over storage as part of an orchestrated failover with virtual machines, and that is actually all handled by ASR and VMM. And so we're working with our storage partners to ensure that the integration is something that is seamless. Right, and really, you don't have to think about it. It doesn't get in your daily workflows for delivering the value add services for your end users. We want to make sure that this is fully automated. So if we go back to the circle of capabilities, pretty much everything stays the same. You can configure your endpoints between source and target. You can enable protection for virtual machines or a group of virtual machines. You have planned failover. In this case, we're talking about a very nice, clean failover. Everything shuts down on the primary and then starts up on the secondary. Unplanned failover means that something really happened on the secondary, on the primary site. It's down. You want to bring up your applications as soon as possible because that site is just completely gone. So you have unplanned failover. Test failover is very interesting in this case because we don't have Hyper-V Replica in this case. So we're actually leveraging snapshot and cloning capabilities in the array to create the isolated environment on the secondary site. So you still have no interruption to your primary or your production service, but you get the ability to test your DR plans even if you're using SAN replication. Site to site is a primary case that we're supporting today. and we're looking into how we can enable this for on-prem to Azure. In this case, what we're specifically looking at are partners like NetApp and EMC who are provisioning or supporting solutions that use Equinix colo facilities for the SANs that you can then connect over a private network into your Azure IaaS VMs. So how many of you are familiar with Amazon Direct Connect? Okay, and so the equivalent of that in Azure is called ExpressRoute. Have you heard of ExpressRoute? Anybody hear of that? Okay, so ExpressRoute is really where this scenario would come in. Basically, for example, we've got one customer today who has a medical application, an imaging application. It's, you know, our customer has only one data center. They want DR. They're not ready to build another data center from a cost perspective. They want to use ASR for failover, right, for additional capacity. But the application is only supported on very specific hardware, very specific storage devices. So we want to make sure that, you know, through this solution, this customer would not have any hesitation now of going into Azure for DR, because now he can deploy the specific storage device into the Equinix data center and have fully orchestrated DR. So how does this change when we throw in SAN replication? So this is the same diagram I showed before, and we backfill that with all of the storage management we've done already. So again, we're building on top of existing investments. Key components here to remember is that from a management perspective, VMM manages storage remotely via SMAPI through the providers. We manage LUNs and disks via SMAPI as well on all the Hyper-V hosts. So this component stays the same. And where this changes is that the pairing of the storage arrays, the SANs themselves, that's actually handled out of band. That's, you know, that still has to be done through the SAN management tools. But once the SANs are configured, you know, you can install your provider or have a provider already installed, add it to VMM, create CSVs. At that point, this is existing capabilities in VMM. Now, what's new? Once you have a CSV added to Hyper-V, you can then add, or multiple, you can add those CSVs to what's called a replication group. You might also know these as consistency groups on the SAN side. This guarantees that if you have an application that needs data level consistency, all of the LUNs in that replication group replicate together, fail over together. So at this point, this replication group is just an entity in VMM, but then we instantiate that group as well under the covers in the SAN. A new piece is that once you have these RGs created, you add the replication group to your cloud, and at that point, you can have VMs deployed to a cloud that need protection on the right hosts and on the right storage, where you don't have to go and find which LUN or remember which LUN or which hosts are deployed to. All that is handled by VMM and our discovery of all the capabilities of the underlying devices. So at that point now, everything else stays, everything we've talked about from a Hyper-V replica perspective, for example, stays the same. Pair your networks, pair your storage classifications. What's new now is that you can also tell us what pools need to be paired. So all of the provisioning that happens on the primary site, we automate then on the secondary site. So if you created a replication group with four LUNs, as part of protecting that replication group, we will then go and when we start replication, a new replication group would be created on the secondary site with the four LUNs that are appropriate sized, and the replication will start. So all of that automation is handled on the secondary site. And at that point, you can create your protected VMs and then add those VMs to a recovery plan. Now, there's a session that happened yesterday where we covered this in more detail. And so you can just look up by my name and find the session itself. The key component here around automation is that in a plan failover, when you fail over from your primary to your secondary, VMM and ASR will do all the work of masking the LUNs, well, unregistering the VMs, unmasking the LUNs, failing over the storage, unmasking to a set of Hyper-V hosts on a secondary, registering the VMs, and then preparing them for to actually run your application. Right, so all of that is handled as part of the DR orchestration. Now, how are we planning to deliver this? This is actually not as part of vNext, but as part of R2. So it's available as of November 12th as part of a preview. We will release UR5 preview in November with this new feature. Right, and we'll support multiple upgrade paths. The key piece here is that if you have UR3 or UR4, you can upgrade to the preview, right? And then once we have official UR5, RTM of UR5 in January, you can then upgrade from the preview to RTM, right? If you decide that you're not ready to test this feature out in your environment, you can go from UR4 directly to UR5. So you won't, for this one, we won't have to wait until vNext. This one is available in November as part of preview, and it'll go GA with the updates in ASR as part of the first quarter releases. So we've announced multiple partners are in preview with us as part of this release, EMC, NetApp, and HP. There are actually demos in booth for Hitachi, NetApp, and HP downstairs or in the Tech Expo. And these are the partners that will be ready in November, and we have other partners in flight as well, into the first quarter of 2015. So these are only 8 partners. It's not the end of the list. It's just what we can disclose so far. But if there's a partner in particular that you're interested in, please do reach out to me. We can speak after this, or via email or social media. Make sure that we work with the right partners that you need for your environment. All right, let's quickly go through that. Apologies here, this environment disconnected. There we go. I'm going to skip the VMM piece. It's essentially the R2 bits with the new updates. The key piece that I want to highlight in ASR. For those that haven't used ASR, the first piece you want to do is actually have the ability is to configure your endpoints. So you start endpoint configuration through protecting your clouds. So in this case, I've got 2 clouds that are protected, VMMA, VMMB. But if I were to start protecting a new cloud, let's say this one, I would tell ASR I want to protect this cloud. I want to pick my target. In this case, I'm going to protect using another site called, in this case, VMM. My target would be my secondary VMM instance, VMMB demo. And I would pick my target cloud. In this case, TEB. Today, Hyper-V is supported as part of the preview. You can select your SAN. So you can select SAN as the type of storage replication. And in this case, the storage arrays have not been paired from a configuration perspective. Once you hit save, what you'll see here is now that the option to change is disabled. You can't flip from one to the other. But now you'll see that the 2 arrays in this case are paired. These are 2 EMC arrays, and so these are the serial numbers that come up from VMM as part of the provider registration, and they flow all the way up to ASR. So once I've got my endpoints configured, I'll go in and I need to now pair my storage. So I'll click on VMM A as my source, B as my target. So in this case, I've got classifications already paired, and I've got my 2 arrays already paired, and I've told ASR which pools on each array I want to use as part of the DR workflow and automation. So all of this has been done already. I don't want to use the time for this one, but at this point, pools have been paired, and this is where the fun starts. So at this point, I need to now tell ASR what storage replication groups actually need to be protected. So you can enable replication group, not for the entire at a granular level. So instead of saying the entire array is going to fail over, we actually segregate by RGs or replication groups. So you create a replication group, add your LUNs. Once you have your LUNs in there, you can then tell ASR this RG needs to be protected. So that would look like this. I would go to add replication group. I would pick a replication group that I already created. I couldn't show that in VMM, but just magically it appears here. So 1030, and I pick my target array has already been specified, and now I can pick the type of replication I need. So it can be either synchronous or async. In this case, this really depends on what the underlying device supports. It's not dictated by VMM or ASR. So if the device supports synchronous only, you'll only see synchronous. If it supports async only, you'll see async. If it supports both, you have the option of choosing what you need. So you can start specifying clouds that are tier 1 mission critical applications that absolutely need synchronous storage, separate those from the clouds that need some sort of DR, but you don't want to spend the resources on synchronous storage for those applications. So in this case, I could say synchronized storage, and then you'll have a protected protected RG. So at this point, I would go into VMM, and the key piece to highlight in VMM, from a template, I can go off and enable protection, and then placement will go and find the appropriate storage that actually can manage, the storage that actually has that protection enabled. If you don't need protection, we will guarantee that the storage is not used as part of other VM deployments. Let's say you have some VDI instances that need to be deployed that don't need DR. We will, through VMM, you'll never land storage, so you'll never land VMs on storage that's protected. So we make sure that we separate that storage and only use protected storage for VMs that actually need the protection. All right, let me switch back. So a few questions for you. In the technical preview, for the Windows Server technical preview, there's a feature called Storage Replica that's been introduced. And right now that Storage Replica capability is around stretch clusters. So one of the investments that we're looking at right now is what that would look like in Virtual Machine Manager and Azure Site Recovery. So in this case, how many of you are using stretch clusters today? Single clusters across two sites? Okay. And how many of you are orchestrating or have DR across multiple sites with separate clusters? Is that a scenario that you have today? Okay, so it seems kind of split. Excellent. So definitely one of those areas of investment for us to ensure that we provide same consistent experience from ASR and VMM. But the only thing you need to think about now is that instead of creating a replication group with LUNs, you create a replication group with file shares. That's really the difference. And then you can model your applications, deploy them on protected storage, and then make sure that they're failed over consistently between site one and site two. Something else that we demoed as part of the yesterday's session is the ability to fail over guest clusters. This case is a little bit more complicated. What I've shown you before is CSVs unmasked to a Hyper-V cluster, and then failing over all the VMs in those LUNs as part of a group. In this case, we're talking about failing over a group of VMs that have LUNs directly exposed to them. So you can have an iSCSI initiator connected to the iSCSI target, as for, let's say, a SQL guest cluster. And then failover of that not only includes the CSVs that host the VM, but all the LUNs that host the data that's directly attached to the VMs. Now, I'm not talking about pass-through disks. I'm simply talking about an in-guest Windows with an in-guest iSCSI connection to your iSCSI target. So for those that are protecting your applications today, it doesn't have to be with Hyper-V or with Microsoft. Is this a common scenario? The need to offer DR protection for guest clusters using iSCSI or fiber channel storage directly exposed into the virtual machine? So let me ask this question the other way. How many of you today are using synthetic fiber channel or virtual HBAs exposed into your VMs? We got a few. How many of you are using iSCSI LUNs into your virtual machines? Okay, there's a few more. Good. And of those, are you planning to deploy applications that need DR? Okay. So definitely this is not supported today. There's a script that allows you to do this, and we can talk about it. It's part of the yesterday's demo, but it'd be great to get your feedback on this scenario and as far as how much we invest moving forward in the end-to-end orchestration of this particular configuration. The other one is around ExpressRoute, right? This is the on-prem to Azure story. So if you look at ExpressRoute today, you can in the Equinix colo location, you can deploy compute, storage, networking, whatever you can fit into that colo, right? You have a dark fiber connection into the Azure backbone, and from there you can spin up IaaS VMs. If in the guest, you can connect to the iSCSI target. There wouldn't be any fiber channel in this case, but for example, an iSCSI target, you can then go from initiator target on the Azure side. So if you look at the on-prem side, you can have a VM connected to your storage via iSCSI or fiber channel. If we enable replication, not between on-prem to on-prem, but on-prem to Equinix, so now you have your data flow going into this colo. And then if we look at marrying that with the ability to DR from on-prem to Azure, this is another scenario that we're looking into as to, you know, how powerful this will be for you, for customers that need to, that want to go into Azure, that want to use maybe Azure as a target, but have maybe constraints around what storage hardware you can use. So again, this is more for feedback. If you have feedback on this, or if, you know, if this is a scenario for you, or if you have other customers, maybe you're a services provider, and this is a scenario that you want to look at. Another instance of this could be a hoster environment, right? So this could be your colo location offering DR as a service for your customers with maybe one data center or looking at retiring that data center. So we want to make sure that this is a flexible configuration, whether it's Azure as a target or your colo location. Storage QoS management. So for the, how many of you had the chance to use QoS in the preview? We got a few here. How many of you today have a problem around noisy neighbors and guaranteeing SLAs where you think QoS will fit? Do you think this is a scenario for you? Okay. So Patrick Lang had this session earlier yesterday as well, 323, where he talked about QoS in depth as from a platform perspective and the capabilities around identifying noisy neighbors, having actual performance metrics per flow or per VHD, end-to-end, so you can figure out latency and IOPS. So a lot of critical value add that we're delivering on the platform to enable this end-to-end. Not only that, but enlightening Hyper-V so that it can actually participate in defined QoS policies with maximum and minimum IOPS. So very, very key component of our vNext release on the storage side. What we're introducing on VMM are called, what are called top-level policies. So a top-level policy is essentially, today you have to create a QoS policy on every scale-up file server. If you have multiple of those file servers, what we want to ensure is that you have the ability to manage centrally through VMM and then distribute through all of your scale-up file servers. And so from VMM, we have a top-level policy that reflects the capabilities on each scale-up file server, but manages it centrally. So those top-level policies really include minimum and maximums. Policy distribution is then for every scale-out file server in scope for that top-level policy, we'll go off and manage that through VMM. That means that if you go off and manage or change the policy directly, we'll actually override that on the next refresh. So we want to make sure we manage from the top down and we can distribute those policies across multiple scale-out file servers. In the event that, for example, VMM goes away and then, or the storage file server goes away and then is added back into VMM, we're also ensuring that the IDs that are tagged on the policy are consistent so that we can reconstruct the policy, the top-level policy, from the policies that are actually on the scale-out file server. So as an example, if I have policy A that's deployed through VMM on all my scale-out file servers, I'll have three policies on the file servers themselves, one policy in VMM. So the green policy is the top level across a scope of three scale-out file server clusters. Sorry, I should have, these are not nodes in a cluster, these are clusters of scale-out file servers. I can have a policy maybe only across two of them or a policy on only one of them. So you have that flexibility of being one-to-one or one-to-many. So if we look at initial discovery, let's assume that you're working with a threshold, you add that threshold scale-out file server into VMM, and you already have policies provisioned on that scale-out file server. So I'm just using simple numbers here for the ID. In this case, when VMM manages these scale-out file servers, we'll create one policy per, a one-to-one policy mapping. Because at this point, we don't know any better, right? These are all individual policies. That's how you created them. Now, let's assume that you have an environment that's already been managed. You've been deploying top-level policies. And you've got, on rediscovery, we notice that there's three policies, one for each scale-out file server, with the same ID. Now, there's no reason why you would have multiple policies on the same scale-out file server with the same ID, right? These have to be unique. But VMM is the one that actually tags that ID. We generate a GUID as part of provisioning and then tag that GUID on every one of these policies. So if we notice that these three policies have the same ID, we will assume that they were provisioned so that we can manage them as one top-level policy. So I know it's early on, but you know, this is we want to make sure that we get the feedback on how you will actually provision these policies, and if this is something that's going to conflict with the way you plan to manage your policies, or if this is something that's going to add value to you. Right now, we think from in conversations with customers, the top-down approach will work, and that we want to make sure that if multiple policies are created by VMM, that we can roll them up into a top-level policy on rediscovery. Another way, another piece on not only how the top-level policies are provisioned, but why they're provisioned that way. So if you look at, for example, there's multiple policy schemes that Patrick went over yesterday. Two that I want to highlight is, let's say you want to have an environment with tiers of service. If you look at Azure today, every VHD is capped at 500 IOPS. If you want more than 500 IOPS, you don't ask for more IOPS per VHD. You add multiple VHDs to your VM. I think up to 16, I want to say. But that's how you get more IOPS in your VM, by adding more VHDs, not by making or asking for a larger or a higher cap on the VHD itself. So if you wanted to mimic that capability on-prem, you could have a top-level policy that offers bronze service at 500 IOPS, let's say, and then have that one top-level policy distributed across all of your Scale-Out File Server clusters. And then when you deploy your VMs, you can just say, all my VMs that need bronze storage automatically get that policy. Right, and so they'll all be capped at the 500 level. If you wanted to create another tier of service, let's say 2,000 IOPS, you can have that other policy and deploy your the silver level apps into that policy that get a higher IOPS. In this case, you're only managing two policies from VMM's perspective, n number of policies on the Scale-Out File Server. So we want to make sure that we have that simplified management. Another way of looking at this is, let's say you want to provision your applications with a very specific IO profile. In this case, you don't want to have everyone bucketed into one. You want to have maybe a SQL or SharePoint or Exchange application have a very specific IO profile. Okay. So in this case, you can have a top-level policy for your SQL app. That SQL app will then can be deployed on any one of these Hyper-V clusters, and the policy will be available across all of these Scale-Out File Servers. Right? VMM will ensure that the cluster of the application is limited to the Scale-Out File Server cluster that can deliver that SLA. One of the things you'll note is policies do not span Scale-Out File Servers. So if you wanted to offer a reserve or a minimum guarantee for an application, it's not enforced across clusters. It's enforced within the cluster. So we'll guarantee that the SQL application lands on the Scale-Out File Server cluster that can guarantee that minimum IOPS or maximum IOPS, right? But obviously the VMs themselves can be distributed across multiple Hyper-V nodes. In some cases, they could be across multiple clusters. We typically don't see that, but again, if you have cases where you want to distribute one app across multiple Hyper-V clusters, it's great feedback to have. But we'll guarantee that we separate across nodes, we separate across file shares, so you have the maximum resiliency within those clusters. So again, another policy, another way of creating QoS policies. In this case, the expectation is that you'll have multiple policies deployed, maybe by application, maybe by tenant. So the other piece that I am not talking about here is how this eventually will land in Windows Azure Pack. How many of you are familiar with WAP, Windows Azure Pack, have had a chance to use it? Okay. So right now, there's no way of defining policies in this way. So we're investigating with the team how best to present this as part of a plan or a subscription or whatever the capabilities are today in WAP to ensure that you can deploy a SQL a gallery item, a VM role, into this environment and get the IOPS that you need. All right. Switch over to my environment here. All right. So I've got my Scale-Out File Servers. These are the threshold Scale-Out File Servers. And from here, I can also now see that I've got create storage policy, QoS policy. So I'm going to switch over to the QoS policies tab and look at the fact I've got one already created that I'm going to use for the demo. But if I were to create a new one, it's pretty straightforward. It's give it a name, pick the allocation scheme that you need. So if you want all of the virtual disks that are part of this policy to have the same IOPS profile, so let's say a maximum of 500, as opposed to sharing, you can allocate per VHD. That's considered a multi-instance policy. We don't call it that in UI. We're trying to be a little bit more descriptive. So basically, all the virtual disks get the same IOPS policy. The other approach is all the VHDs in this policy share the IOPS resources. So for example, you say this policy has, 2,000 IOPS reserved, or minimum. Right? Then all of the VHDs that are in that policy will share 2,000 IOPS. They don't each get 2,000 IOPS. So those are two different schemes that you could use. So virtual disk resources, let's say I want to have zero reserve, and then 2,000 IOPS maximum. Hit next. You can then specify your scope. And this is what I was talking about before. You can have it on one file server or multiple. It's really how you want to deploy this. So I'll pick two, both of my threshold servers, and I'll hit finish. So now that the policy is there, I can now start tagging my VMs with that policy. So as part of this demo, what I'm going to do is fire off a workload. So this is a VM running on threshold. It's going to start just throwing some I/O against the scout file server. Let me minimize this. Okay. All right. So right now, it's the policy that I have for this is called test. And right now, it's an unlimited maximum IOPS. So right now, I've got two VHDs. So this is the setup for this configuration. I've got one VM, two data disks. One data disk is on scale-out file server 1, a cluster, and another data disk is on file server 2, a separate cluster. I'm not saying that this is a typical configuration, but I want to show the ability for us to distribute policies. So in this case, I'm getting about 10,000 IOPS per VHD. If I go into this test policy, and I go policy settings, right now it's uncapped, I can go and set 7,500. Hit OK. VMM will go off and touch every one of those scale-out file servers, update the policies, and you should see a semi-real-time change across the two scale-out file servers. For some reason, there's a delay on the other one. Not sure why, but eventually that will drop down into 7,500, and then that's when the QoS policy engine, the enforcement engine, will start kicking in and throttling those VHDs to match that QoS policy. I promise it will. Interesting. Oh, you know what happened? This one's only managing one. So if I go back into the policy itself, and I say scope, I can pick my second file server, and then you'll see the other one manages drop as well. So we're doing this in such a way that not so much one application spread across multiple clusters, but if you are managing a private cloud and you have tenants and you want to put them into a class of service, you can start seeing this as a way of delivering your SLAs and charging back to customers based on these kind of policies. So I know it's early, but if there's an opinion in the room on how you plan to implement QoS or what you'd like to see out of QoS, is this something that a scheme that you would implement? Maybe tiers of service for your customers? Is this something that resonates? So, I know it's early. I mean, I don't know if you have feedback, but if you do, when you do, all my contact information is at the end of the presentation. Please do reach out to us and provide that feedback. What I've noticed with chargeback, everyone has a different scheme. Everyone charges back very differently. In some cases, it's magic. Nobody knows how it happens, but somehow a number pops out at the other end on how much should be charged per IOPS or per gigabytes, et cetera. So I want to make sure that we land this right to meet those requirements, but we know that it's going to vary from customer to customer. All right. Let me switch back and start wrapping up. There we go. I'm going to skip. Yeah, we talked about this. All right, storage monitoring. So I'm going to quickly flip back to this slide. And so we talked about storage API. We've been primarily using storage API, storage management API, for provisioning and configuration and discovery. What we're looking at now is investments in how we can monitor storage using SMAPI from an operations manager perspective. So typically today, if you have a NetApp or EMC or HP Array, you would deploy System Center, go to off to you know, and get an MP from that's provided by the partner, install that, configure it, fine tune it, make sure that you know not too much noise, not too many events. But eventually you get a you know you get a package or an MP that you need for your environment that's monitoring your storage device. As part of the work that we've done with CPS, we're actually delivering storage monitoring in box. So as soon as you light up CPS, monitoring is on by default. Okay, so we're leveraging those capabilities and those advancements in ensuring that we have that across not only our first-party storage, but also our third-party partners as well, our ecosystem. So if you look at how this plugs up underneath, plugs in underneath, provider plugs into SMAPI. Today, it's primarily used by VMM. OM, or operations manager, will now take a dependency on SMAPI, and in combination between the correlated data in VMM between Hyper-V hosts, file shares, virtual disks, storage pools, scale-out file servers, all of that rich fabric information, and then and everything we have from the server side, and then marry that with what we have in OM around instance-level monitoring. So instead of OM having to know about disks, controllers, links, and just hundreds of objects and monitor these objects, and then have to build the correlation engine in OM, the work that we're doing now is ensuring that the storage subsystems, that in this case, let's say a scale-out file server, actually does all of the hardware correlation all the way up to a file share, for example. So let's say a physical disk is down, or a physical disk is degraded, or there's a component in the subsystem that's damaged that might impact the availability of a storage pool or of a file share. All of that correlation is done and then wrapped up into an alert or an indication that then gets bubbled up from the underlying provider all the way up to SMAPI. Once SMAPI receives it, VMM can then correlate that, the file share to VMs, VMs to tenants, tenants to subscriptions, or even System Center in WAP, and then OM can then take that data and say, this alert on device X has shown that there's a hardware failure, will impact these tenants, and then it might have recommended actions. One piece that we're working on is what we're gonna do around remediation. But the idea here is that by the time you get the alert in your console, you know which tenants are impacted, which VMs are impacted, and what storage device is causing the issue. And then you can prioritize whether it's something that you need to fix now, or file a ticket, or if it's something that you can hold off until the weekend or whenever there's some downtime. So this is the level of investment we're doing for first-party storage. And since SMAPI is our abstraction layer, we want to make sure that we have that same capability for our third-party SAN and NAS. So wrapping up, we talked about Windows NAS investments around bare metal provisioning, managing scale-out file servers with SANs, our investments around storage replication, management in VMM, and then lit up through Azure Site Recovery for DR, both for SAN, our SAN partners, and also for our first-party storage replica. Storage QoS management around top-level policies, how we discover policies and manage those policies. And finally, our investments in storage monitoring around unifying file and block and having those intelligent alerts correlated at the subsystem and then bubbled up into OM and VMM, really where you provide the value-add in context around plans and VMs and users. So a lot of sessions, I know we're almost towards the end of TechEd itself, but there's a lot of sessions that have already happened. Make sure you can look those up as well. And as far as finding me, my email is here, hector@microsoft.com. I've got Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn as well. Please do feel free to reach out to me at any time. If you have any questions, if there's any pieces here that you want to talk about more, I'm really interested in chargeback around QoS, and I'm interested in hearing from you around DR and Azure Site Recovery integration with your storage devices. And that is it. So before we finish up, are there any questions? We've got one of the young ladies here with a microphone. Yes, sir.
Thanks for the presentation. I have a question about scale-out file server for SAN. Mm-hmm. So can you please share the background or the value proposition for that capability?
Scale-out file server on SAN?
Yep.
So let me switch back to this. So the feedback we've gotten from customers is that there's a lot of love for scale-out file server and the flexibility around file-level storage, right? And so there's customers that are deploying spaces. There are customers that are maybe not ready for spaces but want to use their existing SAN. So they trust the SAN, they have a SAN already in their environment, but they want to use the flexibility of scale-out file server. And so marrying the two together, actually, for us, the value proposition is around giving you flexibility, right? So we want to make sure that scale-out file server is the front-end target for your Hyper-V workloads, but we want to ensure that the underlying storage can be whatever you have in your data center that meets your needs. That's really the motivation behind it.
Makes sense. Thank you.
Any other questions? That must have been a good lunch. All right. Well, I'll be around until tomorrow morning. You can reach out to me at the Tech Expo floor. Thank you for joining me today. I really appreciate it. And enjoy the rest of TechEd. Thank you.